You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 248 of the Shared Security Show, and joining me this week is the always available Mr. Scott Wright.
Except when I'm not, yes.
Except when you're not. No dig
at
Kevin.
I tend to be more available than Kevin these
apparently,
days.
Apparently. Now, a little story about Kevin. He actually was going to join us. In fact, he did join the Zencaster here, the recording, and then had to pop off because one of his clients apparently had a major security incident that happened at the same time that he was about to record the show with us. So we'll
and
let him out.
He wasn't able to prevent it. I'm just saying. You know.
Yeah. Now, hopefully he's not like, you're at fault, Kevin, for
I'm
my
sure
security incident.
Sure. Those people are in good hands.
Yes.
We know.
But, you know, hey, such is the life of a consultant, right? I mean, this is, you know, he runs a consulting company and this is what happens. So, but he does seem like he's feeling better because I know last week he was sick. So he seems to be back to his chipper self, but we will catch him next week. So it is just us cats.
Well, let's amp it up a little bit and make up for Kevin's loss here. So.
That's right. And the first thing we wanted to talk about was Wi-Fi drones. There was actually an incident where a financial company, and they don't say which financial company this was, but and this was here in the U.S., their security team had found a drone that was used as an attack vector to gain access to the internal network by stealing an employee's credentials. Essentially, this drone had a Wi-Fi pineapple assigned to it or attached to it. And this allowed them to attack the wireless network, therefore getting an employee to essentially give away their credentials so they could the attacker could access the network remotely via this drone.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, there's some debate on whether or not it's a high priority kind of thing to worry about because it does require the drones to get pretty close to the area, but it is definitely a threat. And it's interesting, I think, how it actually happened too, where I think somebody in the security operations team, I think, discovered that there was an employee who was logged in from home, but also logged in or was trying to log in locally within the physical building. And that didn't seem right. And so I guess they searched around and found a couple of drones on the roof.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I mean, not cool for them, but it's a really cool attack. And I did want to say, too, this is something that has been talked about in the security community for many years now. In the article, which we'll have linked in the show notes, they talked about this has been presented at Black Hat and some other conferences as well in the past of, you know, in theory, people could use drones to attack a company.
Yeah. And I mean, it's too bad Kevin's not here. You know, we could go back to the story about, you know, his Tesla getting hacked, you know, not that his did, but he's not worried at all
not
about
yet.
His Tesla being hacked by a drone, but maybe it's getting closer.
Yeah. So, you know, it does open up some interesting questions for companies. You know, obviously I think the threat here is pretty low. This is only the first incident, I think, recorded that we've seen or that we know about, right? That this has happened. But, you know, I mean, what's your mitigation, right? Do we install anti-drone technology around our offices? Do we have to look for drones, you know, as a scout, right? Looks for things in the wild around buildings. I'm not really sure, but
it's
interesting.
Brand new, territory, I guess you
call it. Yeah. The one thing I would say, though, is that there's two things. One, the attack here, it's not the drone itself. It's actually the Wi-Fi network that was attacked. And with a Wi-Fi pineapple, what that does is it masquerades a legitimate Wi-Fi network and will trick an employee into logging in with their credentials to this network. So there is some awareness here, right, that we will companies should be doing anyway, of course. And then other safeguards, of course, defense in depth and other things. So it's not necessarily we have to ban drones around the building. Other controls need to be in place as well.
It's layered security, like we said. Right? But and as you said, really, the employees are, I call them the first line of defense and the last line of defense, right? If the technology doesn't catch the bad guys or stop them, somebody somewhere is going to notice something going wrong, and you got to get that reported sooner rather than later. So
just a warning there. Watch out for drones attacking your corporate network. One more thing to worry about, right, Scott?
That's right. No shortage.
That's right. So that's actually a great segue, talking about awareness, right? Into our segment, Aware Much.
So today's Aware Much segment is brought to you, as usual, by ClickArmor, the next generation of awareness training and engagement. So it goes way beyond phishing assessments. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But these guys, we've talked a lot on the show about what happens when you are finished with an electronic device and the data that's on it. We always say, make sure you wipe your devices before you throw them out or sell them or give them away. And we still advocate for this, of course. But there is a really good question on the Reddit privacy thread lately that was really just saying, I've got an iPad, tablets, and phones that can't be switched on anymore. I'm not sure what that's about.
The batteries are dead.
You can't find the charger.
Broken. Yeah.
Charge them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do I wipe the data in them before I dispose of them? So it's a good question.
It is.
Okay. It's a little bit of a problem there. On many devices, obviously, you're going to look for the factory reset button if there is power, to see if you can get the job done that way and clear all the memory. But if we're talking about devices that don't have that setting or you can't turn it on, what should people do to get rid of the data that they really don't want people to access ever? So it was an interesting thread. They had some interesting discussions ranging from, using a strong magnet to demagnetize. I'm not sure if that will work on not the flash on memory.
No, not really.
To physically shredding or burning the device, and lots of different ways you could do that. So I guess a question for, I was going to put it to our crack panel, but our crack Tom.
Crack Tom. Yeah.
What would you say, Tom?
Well, physical destruction really is the only thing that comes to mind. It's just, how safely do you do the physical destruction? We've always said, I think, drilling holes through electronics is a good way, right, to do that. Probably not that difficult with an iPad. And of course, if you're wearing eye protection and other things to make sure you're not hurting yourself in the process.
Yeah, right? But you have to sort of know where the memory is to do that. So you may have to take the case off, right, so you can hopefully find the chip that actually holds the memory and then go
right
at it.
Yeah. The other advice I saw in there too is that there's these equipment and data destruction companies that exist. Sometimes, your local city has like a yearly properly dispose of your electronics and things like that. Mm-hmm. And this one commenter said that you can actually watch them destroy the device while you're standing there, right?
Well, that'd be entertaining if nothing else.
It would be, absolutely. So that's one way, plus drilling holes or smashing it with a hammer.
Some people said cracking the chips and then burning them. I guess that's
burning is bad.
That's layered security, right?
Yeah, obviously we don't want to burn things that cause harm to the environment.
Yeah, there's
batteries.
You don't know what kind of chemicals in there.
You should never burn batteries. That is really bad. Batteries.
It's funny. I saw on some thread, I saw there was an old, like a decades old tip of throw your old batteries in the fire.
No.
And watch the colors. And
some other guy said microwave your electronics in your home microwave. Like, no. That is really not good. But,
I was thinking of some myself. Actually, there were some that mentioned thermite, which I'm familiar with. Thermite, a metal powder, a metal oxide kind of little chemical reaction.
I've got that around the house.
It burns very hot. Right? You see it in some kind of drama shows, right?
Of course.
Where the guy wants to protect his computer, so he sets a little thing of thermite on top of it and sets it off. Burns through everything, so it's not recoverable. So thermite is a possibility if you happen to have any.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also thinking, you know, other fun things. You know, somebody mentioned volcanoes. If it's legal, throw it in a volcano.
You're on vacation in Hawaii. You know, toss it.
If you're going that route, why not just shoot it straight at the sun? I mean, I don't think it's going to be recoverable that way, right? Put or even out into outer space, like
yeah.
As long as it gets out of orbit,
yeah, exactly.
I don't think anybody's going to catch it anyway.
Yeah, I like the one I like the best is target practice too. So, you know, if you're shooting guns, you know, you can put your old iPad up there as a target.
Yeah. Eventually it'll get obliterated.
That's right.
Hopefully
if you're
a decent shot.
If you're a good shot. There you go.
So this fun installment of Aware Much has been brought to you by ClickArmor, which is the future of security awareness in a world where live phishing tests are proving to be ineffective at reducing vulnerabilities among employees, but also they're effective at damaging corporate security culture sometimes. So we're going to look at that.
Yeah.
Anyone who's been following me on LinkedIn may have seen my ongoing stream of reasons why live phishing tests suck. And as of today, we're up to number 14. How many there will be?
That's a lot.
You actually need to follow me.
They must really do suck. Yeah.
They must really do suck. I'll use that quote, Tom.
Thank you. You're welcome.
But if you follow on LinkedIn, you can keep up to date on them. I'm posting them with a number on each one, so they'd be easier to free to find in my activity feed. But I'm going to start sharing them here for your convenience. So the number one reason why live phishing tests suck beans is you can have unexpected employee reactions, which means somebody gets a phishing test email and they don't realize it's a test, but it sets off enough of their anxiety or their reactions, you know, emotional reactions without really thinking about security, that they do unexpected things. Like I've had one where somebody contacted an unknowing executive saying somebody's trying to exfiltrate data from our our systems or you know, I can't remember what they were saying, but it caught the executive off guard. And then, of course, everything flows down from there and it just causes a whole lot of unwanted, unnecessary communications, call it, right? But people also contact the media. There are stories, you know, in the news, if you Google them, on GoDaddy, on Chicago Tribune, and I think there's British Midlands Railway or something like that, where people, you know, were so upset about being attacked by their own IT team that they went out on social media, and that causes a PR thing. So unexpected employee reactions are the number one reason why I say live phishing tests suck. And the thing that I compare it to is, you know, we're trying to measure vulnerability, but if we're doing that in IT systems and you do a penetration test on an IT system to see if they're vulnerable, you usually have what's called terms of engagement, right? Where you understand what's allowed, what's not allowed, what's likely to happen, and what, you know, what are the consequences, and you're not going to hold the tester responsible for that. So those kinds of things are pretty easy to define. What's the worst case? When you're testing humans, you really don't know what's the worst case that somebody could do in reaction to your phishing test. So that's why I say number one reason is unexpected employee reactions. So stay tuned for future installments of Why Live Phishing Tests Suck, within our awareness segments. And you can find my up-to-date list on LinkedIn. I'm at linkedin.com/in/Scott Wright. And it just doesn't make sense to do live phishing tests considering the costs and the limited value that you get from them, plus the potential damage to culture, which we'll expand on in future episodes. But I'm on a mission to get insurance companies and audit frameworks to accept our immersive virtual simulations as acceptable and better compliance requirements for working on assessing employees' vulnerability. So that's it for this episode of Aware Much. So we're going to talk about Signal, everybody's favorite secure messaging app.
Yes.
What's wrong with Signal?
Oh boy, this has caused a whole stir in the privacy community. You can pretty much check Reddit or any other place that people talk about Signal. So Signal is removing SMS support. SMS text message support on Android specifically. So first off, this does not affect iOS. This feature was never enabled in iOS, but this essentially allowed people that use the default messaging app on Android could specify that they want to use Signal as part of that messaging app. So you would add the option of sending a secure message to, say, another Signal user through the default app in Android. So what this did essentially was it mixed regular SMS text messages from those of your contacts that don't have Signal with ones that do. And there was a little lock, I think, designation showing which ones were secured by using Signal.
Interesting.
And this has caused a lot of controversy because a lot of privacy advocates and others have gotten their non-technical friends and family to use Signal, or at least the secure messaging aspect of it, which is great, without using another app or having two apps, right? So you have the Signal app, and then you have the, like an iOS, you have iMessage, right? So like I have to use two messaging apps in iOS. I'm okay with that because there's only certain people that I want to communicate over Signal, but then there's others that I'm not sending information that could potentially be, you know, sensitive, or I'm not afraid of it being compromised, right? So I use iMessage. Plus, it's the only way that I can talk to or send messages to Android users. And we talked about that in that one show about green versus blue texts, right? And kind of the controversy over that. So
and the fact that I'm colorblind and can't see
that. And it doesn't matter to you. Yeah, exactly. So this has caused a stir. And obviously, Signal has given its own reasons for disabling support for that. Obviously, we all know SMS is insecure. It's plain text. It was never designed for security. There's much more secure ways of sending messages like Signal. So I can see the point of we want to remove anything that provides insecurity, right? Even though that has nothing to do with Signal.
Yeah, or even confusion about what's encrypted and what's not.
Correct. And that was their reasoning for doing that. Yeah. And so this is causing a stir with a lot of Android users because now they all have to migrate to using Signal as their messaging app, or now they're going to have two messaging apps, which is just going to cause some confusion.
Hopefully, I see a lot more people using Signal, so that's a good sign.
Yes, I do too. I do too, but we'll see how Signal manages this. You know, there's a lot of people that are really upset and they're saying, oh, I'm never using Signal again. This is going to, you know, the people that I wanted to use Signal are not going to use it anymore. And so I don't think this is the end of Signal by any means. I think it's just something that they're going to have to work through. And I think people are just going to have to, on the Android side, are going to have to, unfortunately, just get used to that change. And, you know, we all love change, right?
We do.
Any kind of change. That's right.
Yep. So is that it for this week?
That is it for this week. So we're going to keep it short and sweet this week. The other announcement I will just tell everybody is I started to put out some YouTube shorts on our YouTube channel. So little snippets from each episode. Yeah. So at least the last couple episodes and some of the old ones, I'm going to kind of pick a under 60 second clip and we're going to start sharing those out as shorts. So if that's something you're into on YouTube, you may see some of those start appearing in your feed.
That's cool. Awesome. Yeah. All right.
All right. But I think that's all we have time for this week, Scott. So thank you for being my one and only co-host. We'll see Kevin next
welcome,
week.
And thanks, everybody, for joining us.
And we'll talk to everyone next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.